This interview is for the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress American Folk Life Center, and it is with Alice Lillian Watson Lane. Mrs. Lane was a WAVE serving from June 1, 1944 to March 8, 1946. Today is Friday, March 7, 2008. My name is Harriet Williamson. Henry Radcliffe is the director of sound and lighting and is also the videographer. Also in the studio is Mrs. Lane's husband, Lloyd Chester Lane, who is a veteran of the United States Navy. We are in the television studio of WILL in Urbana, Illinois, on the University of Illinois campus. Mrs. Lane, to start, would you like to talk about when and where you were born in? Perhaps fill us in a little bit on your parents and your background and where you grew up, and perhaps talk about the various schools that you attended.
Well, my father was a coal miner from Illinois, and every spring or winter they went on strike. So that's why I was born in River Rouge, suburb of Detroit, Michigan, and that's why I came right back to Illinois. I was just a baby when I came back, and then my father left my mother when I was 18 months old, so they got a divorce, and between living at my grandparents and relatives. In fact, I was almost adopted. This couple, a doctor and his wife, took me for a while. And when they found out my mother wasn't going to give me up, they brought me home right away. Anyway, my dad's sisters and brothers, they were from Scotland. They had migrated to Detroit area. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was born there. They were visiting my grandparents. Anyway, my mother went to Detroit, and she was a maid around Champaign-Urbana. And she went to Detroit to work for real rich people in Grosse Pointe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she got married to a gentleman, a Bulgarian. His name was Milan Siskov. And I was 5 years old. I think it was four when they got the divorce, my mother did. But I was five when we went to Detroit to live. That was 1928, mm-hmm. the year before the Depression hit. And things went along pretty good. Milan, my stepfather, had played in Henry Ford's band, and he was very musical, so I learned a lot about operas. Anyway, the Depression hit, and things went downhill. My mother couldn't. She was working at Hudson's, painting a stripe around the cars. And it just got so bad, we had to come back to Illinois. And my father had bought, with my grandparents, 12 acres next to my grandparents there in Urbana. So we moved in with my grandparents for a while. I was 9 years old when we did that. And Grandma was still using a horse and buggy to deliver vegetables and things. Anyway, we bought these two rooms, and we lived there on two rooms. Mother, of course, worked in town. My stepfather really didn't. He was from, like, royalty or something in Bulgaria. He couldn't see going out and getting a job. And we couldn't have WPA because he couldn't work for those because we had 12 acres. So anyway, I went to Marriott School And then I when I eighth grade, and then I went to Urbana High for 4 years. And then my first job was at the Union Building in the dishwashing room. Things still weren't very good in the country. And Eleanor Roosevelt came and dedicated the Union Building when I was there in December. And I got to see her. They let us all go upstairs and see her. I'll never forget her black clothes. Anyway.
Why were her clothes black, do you think?
What?
Her clothes were black?
No, her stockings were black.
Oh, her stockings were black. Okay.
Anyway, later my mother was working for this professor, Louis Howe's Franklin Roosevelt's right-hand man in the White House. And it was his daughter, married to a professor, and mother worked for her later. But anyway, Eleanor Roosevelt came and stayed with her, visited, had dinner, and helped set the table and everything. Anyway, about a year after I was out of high school, I got married to Army fellow stationed in Chanute. And I lived in Syracuse for a while. And I worked at General Electric. And I worked on the first 10 Kier units radar that was to be used on ships. And they placed me at number one on the assembly line, which was just to put a little rim around. But I helped build them and I could repair them and everything. That's what gave me the idea that I wanted to work in when I joined the service. And then I came home and I got a divorce. My husband was running around. And then I went back and worked in Syracuse at a Krauss Heinz painting things they used for identifying whether their ship's friend or foe. I used khaki, you know. And I worked there 6 months, and I went home. I got tired of that and went home, and I thought, I saw the ads for the trying to get women to join the waves, so I thought that's a good idea. And my mother thought it was a good idea, too. So I went and joined, and I had to wait that was in March, but I had to wait till June 1st to actually be called up. Mm-hmm. And I went to, took the New York Central to Hunter College, which is now Lehman College, and went ahead my boot camp there for 6 weeks. And we got 1 weekend off, but the Paramount Theater Studios was filming the movie Here Come the Waves. So I got to march 2 weeks, which was really hot, and girls fainted. But anyway, all we got from Paramount was an extra weekend in New York City. So then I did pass the test to go to school. So they just sent me to Mercer Field, Facility Field in Trenton, New Jersey, which was better. I had asked for San Diego and I got to New Jersey. My girlfriend asked for she got San Diego anyway, but I was lucky I got radar, which I had asked for, and I put the first day I had to make coffee because the chief was really mad because we came in, we were the first waves, so he made us make coffee. He thought that's what we were going to do. Anyway, he got shipped out in about a week. and we put radio radar in the TBM. It used to be TBF by Grumman, but TBM was General Motors. And the Avenger and the Wildcat, which is FM2. And then I checked the IFF gear on the Corsair. And one time, smoke was coming out of the plane, and I thought, oh my gosh. And it was about $1 million plane, but it wasn't anything. But I had to call in and the radio and tell them that, that it was okay. And while I was, one day, a big torpedo bomber came in that was, they called it a pregnant. It had all this, they had round-the-clock duty, you know, police. It had all this underneath the radar and all kinds of, I don't know what it was. Anyway, it was quite a excitement, you know, seeing they had to protect it. And while I was there, too, once in a while, the Marines were at the gate. And once in a while, we had to go to the, and escort people back to the airplanes, to the hangars. And one day, this fellow said, aren't you from Urbana? And he had been my teacher, science, and later he was head of a ship someplace. Anyway, that was interesting, but it, and I played basketball for the Waves, and we had our instructor, our coach was a Harvard professor, the same one that taught me how to get my rate. Anyway, we didn't win many games, but we had fun.
Can I back up for a minute? I want to ask you a couple of questions. When you were at Hunter and in boot camp, what was the training that you received there?
Well, just how to act in the Navy, and I don't even remember, it's been so long ago. Mm-hmm. We had to take swimming, and we got all kinds of shots, I remember. But we had classes every day.
Were the classes about technical things, or were they
No,
more?
Not really.
Okay.
I don't really remember what they were.
Now, once you got to Mercer Field and you were involved in installing this radar, what was the purpose of the radar in the airplanes? How did the radar function? What was the purpose of it for the pilot?
Well, I guess to see where the planes were. And another thing, I fussed at them to let me go up in the TBM, and every time they aviation radio man would go up with the mechanic, but this time they had to go back up, so they didn't have to have the radio man, so they let me go up right after I ate lunch, and we flew out over the ocean, and I got sick, really sick.
Oh, that's too bad. But it must have been an exciting experience, though, to be in the plane.
Oh, it was. And this one supply officer, she went up practically every day, and she got sick every time she went up.
Of course, tell her about no parachute.
Oh, well, I didn't have a parachute. They didn't give us parachutes.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it hard to fit the radar into the plane, or was it tight quarters in there for
Well, the TBM is pretty good size.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to climb up on the plane's wings to get in the back, you know, where they put the radar.
So the radio radar was in the back of the plane?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a kind of a walkway that you could go up to the pilot.
Now, were there
and the gunners, you know, were up above. But there was a plank, or, you know, that you could walk up. It wasn't steps or anything. Mm-hmm. It was just...
How many planes would you work on each day?
I don't remember.
Would it be, a couple, or would it be many?
Probably at least. Uh-huh. And when we weren't working on the planes, when it was raining out, they made us paint. Navy paint inside the hangars.
What were you painting the planes as well?
No, just the hangars.
The hangars.
And they also let us go to class. This Harvard professor, she taught us how to, all about electrodes and mm-hmm. electricity. And
so you were learning more about...
I finally got my rate when there was a compliment on the station, and so many of ARTs, and after the war was over, they started shipping him out, so that's why I got the rate. Mm-hmm. But so, I had to march a platoon in strip of 44.
So what was your ultimate rank then when you were in the waves? And were you assigned to a particular squadron or division?
I just Mercer Field.
Okay.
It was aviation radio technician's mate. Mm-hmm. And then they changed it just before I got out of the service, just before 46, I guess it was. They changed it to aviation electronic technician's mate, third class.
Now, you said at the beginning when you got to Mercer Field, you were sent off to make coffee. Do you feel that while you were in the waves that people that you were working with appreciated and recognized the value of having women in the military?
No, they didn't appreciate, because that meant they had to go overseas. Mm. So there was a lot of hostility there. I mean, some of them, not all of them. And that was just a few of the sailors. But they knew that they would have to leave, because... we were in the service.
So did you feel that you received poor treatment by those people?
No, not really. Just mm-hmm. things that were said, Mm-hmm. And then after the war, I think it was in September, they sent us, several of us, to Jacksonville for a week, trying to figure out where to send us from there. So we were in a transitional place, which was a big, where most of the Navy was trained in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. The men were. And then I was sent to Opelika, which is was called the Miami Air Station, which is 11 miles out of Miami. And the first night we stayed in Al Capone's casino. I'll never forget. And the mosquitoes came in. They had those old-fashioned wooden windows. And the mosquitoes came in, and they were terrible. I thought, boy, is Florida going to be like this? But I never saw I never saw any roaches. Jacksonville, it was terrible. Our barracks were full of roaches.
Now, what were you doing when you were in Florida? What was your first job here?
I was in administration. We had to type nine copies to send the sailors back to the ships. They would come into the hospital, and we would have to type papers to send them back to the ships.
Now, while you were typing that, was that something, did you learn kind of the story about that person and what had happened to him?
No.
No?
No, I never.
No, it was just pretty much straightforward.
And I was there 6 months.
Uh-huh. And so you won't...
Because I had that rating, I got out earlier. If I'd have been a yeoman, I'd have stayed 6 more months.
Mm-hmm. Now, was that... towards the end of the war, and you were looking forward
this to... This was after the war.
Okay, so after
the war. I was sent to Florida because the war was over.
Well, maybe I should go back and ask you about the chronology. So when you left boot camp, you went to Mercer Field, and how many months were you there? And was that in 45 that you were at Mercer Field?
44 to September of 45, mm-hmm. June for July, the middle of July, till, so it was just a little over a year, I guess.
Now, can you talk at all about maybe any of the feelings that surrounded you while you were at Mercer Field? Was there a sense of urgency or anything like that because of the war and the fact that you were working on these planes?
Yes. Well, it was war, you know, but we never got papers, so we didn't even know how much, you know, how it was going, really. I didn't even know D-Day was, because I was traveling. I went to, you know, Hunter College when D-Day, so I didn't know much about that. Mm-hmm. But,
Now, I know when you were at Mercer Field, you wanted to mention one of the very well-known people that you worked with there. That was Harry Guggenheim.
Harry Guggenheim was our commanding officer. He loved to play tennis, and the men didn't. He was always wanting to play with the men, tennis player. They didn't like. Anyway, he was a bastard of Cuba, I guess, before he, and he was a World War I hero, I guess, mm-hmm. pilot. And he was a pretty nice guy. When I was there at Mercer Field, we used to go into New York City and Philadelphia, because we were 90 miles from New York City and 60 miles from Philadelphia. And we were right near Washington's Crossing, and they took us on a picnic there where Washington crossed the Delaware. And we used to go hunting or sunbathing at Asbury Park. We used to hitchhike to Asbury Park because in those days it was a lot longer if you took the bus, you know. Mm-hmm. But and we even hitchhiked to New York City one time, several of us.
How do you feel about the time that you spent at Mercer Field? Was it a good experience for you?
It was a very good. I really mm-hmm. enjoyed the work I did. One time I had to weld. They were putting something together, so, and they asked me to go, and I helped them. But I thought was really enjoyable.
Was there any danger involved in the work that you were doing?
Not really. Mm-hmm. No.
How long would those planes be at Mercer Field before they took off and were...
Just a few days.
Just a few days. So there was a...
They test flew them right away, mm-hmm. and then put them in the hangars. And we had a lot of waves there working in the supply and different departments.
Were those planes then flown to other naval bases or to aircraft carriers?
They were flown
carriers?
To California and out uh-huh. to aircraft carriers. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to come one time to Champaign. I don't remember where we would have flown to on a TBM, but it was winter, and I had leave to come home. And it snowed in Ohio, so I didn't get to... I had to come by on train. Yeah. But usually they went the southern route, especially in winter. Mm-hmm. And one night this Marine, she was kind of snooty. She slept above me in the bunk. And the next day their plane crashed and she was killed.
Oh, my goodness.
So
was that a TBM that crashed?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, they could constantly, people were coming and flying out to the coast or what. I guess they must have been going to California. Mm-hmm. That's why we had to, when we did guard duty, we had to escort the people to the hangars because everything was confidential, you know, in the airport. They didn't want people, you know, going into the hangars. And
mm-hmm. How many waves were at Mercer? Do you have a feeling for how many women were there at that time?
Probably about 100. Uh-huh. No, not that many. Because that book I have, mm-hmm. there's not that many waves in it.
Mm-hmm. Were those people that were in your boot camp at Hunter? Or had they also been trained in other places?
I didn't know any of them.
Oh, you didn't know any of
no.
them?
Uh-huh.
So there wasn't a lot of intermixing of people?
No. Mm-hmm. And I went home one time to Syracuse with a wave, and I said, let's go over to Krause Heinz and just visit, because that's where the factory was. And they wouldn't let me in. They said, it's a defense plant. But I said, I used to work here. And they said, oh, and they ended up giving me a $25 bond and a subscription to a magazine for several years. And I never knew that, because when I left, I didn't know why, you know, I realized I was going to be joining the service. Mm-hmm. So that was a pleasant surprise. And I got to go up to Boston one time with one of the gals. In Long Island, I went to a wedding out in Long Island. So I got to, I packed a lot in those little over a year.
What was the date then when you left the service?
March the 8th.
Of 1946. And what happened to you after you left the service?
And I was mustered out in Great Lakes. I went to beauty school on the GI Bill, mm-hmm. and then I flunked hair dyeing, which I've been accused of dyeing my hair for years. Anyway, and then I got married and had four children.
Now, how did you meet your husband?
Well, we were at this nightclub. My girlfriend's sister, we were celebrating the gal's birthday, and her sister's car wouldn't start. And so Lloyd and his friends were sitting near us, so they took me home. So that's how I met him.
Now, you and your husband were both in the Navy. Did any of your children join
No.
the military?
I tried to get him to join.
How do you think this experience has influenced your life?
Well, I think it influenced my life quite a bit. I really enjoyed what I did and the experience. And I was recently talking to a girl I talked into going into the Navy, and she said that was the best thing that ever happened to her. She's been active in the American Legion. I'm a lifetime member of the VFW in Urbana.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go very often.
Are there people that you have kept in touch with through the years?
Yeah, for several years I did. But I know the one gal that I played basketball, she was from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I visited her, and she came and visited us. So, but There's no, and I think she must have died. I haven't heard from her for a couple of years.
Now, I neglected to ask you a little bit more about the basketball experience when you were in the military. Was that an important activity for people on the base, and did you play at other bases or travel around? Or
we played Camp Kilmer is where the Army went out of when they went overseas. Mm-hmm. We beat them. And then we found out why later, because their star player wasn't playing that night. Anyway, that they hadn't been beaten for a long time. But we played mostly just citizens. The men played. We went on the bus with the men players, mm-hmm. and they would we would play first, and then they would play. We played Eastern Pennsylvania, I remember, in several groups in around Trenton, because mm-hmm. they usually had a woman's team in the East like that. We didn't have those around here. We didn't have basketball, but they called me Red, and my girlfriend, they called us the Gold Twins.
Was that an important activity for people at that time?
Yeah. Well, I spent a lot of time shooting baskets over the rec room. The rec hall was right across the street. They had the men's barracks were one side of the tennis court, and the other side was us. And I tried tennis, and they even went out real early in the morning, and the men hung out the windows and laughed. They'd come. So I liked to play, and we saw a lot of I saw a lot of movies over there in the rec. They showed movies, and they had church every Sunday.
Is there anything else that you would like to mention during this interview? Anything that we did not talk about but is important to you that you would like to say?
Well, I have four really great children. One lives in Menifee, California, and one lives in Spring Hill, just south of Nashville, Tennessee. And a son lives in Urbana, and a daughter, Joyce, in Champaign. And Steve lives in Urbana, and Roger lives in California, and Gladys lives in Tennessee. So we go to California in the winter, and in the spring we go to Tennessee.
When you are with your children, do they ever ask you about your experiences, or have they ever asked you about your experiences during the war?
Yeah, I think they have. Mm-hmm. And I worked almost 23 years at the Urbana School District. I typed when my husband went to business college after the war, after we got married. I typed letters for him, and I got interested in typing, so I bought a typewriter and typed for students for 10 years.
Oh, my goodness.
I was number one on the Illini. So I did a lot of typing on this old manual.
Oh, my goodness.
And then I went to work at the Urbana School District in 61, and I worked for the director of personnel and special ed at first, and then I was director of personnel secretary for about 20 years. In the last 3 years, my boss was the director of personnel anyway, and he was made superintendent, so I was his administrative assistant.
It sounds
for
like
3 years
position
at Wiley School. Mm-hmm. So that was really enjoyable. So I know a lot of teachers.
I bet there are a lot of people who owe their degrees to you for all the typing that you did.
I typed 30 theses.
Oh, my goodness.
I have a record of all the theses. That was the hardest. In those days, nowadays, it wouldn't be a problem at all.
Mr. Lane, is there anything you might like to make sure we add to this interview?
actually, I knew, I didn't know it, but I saw her when she was 14 or 15. I roller skating over here in Urbana.
I roller skated. Yeah.
So your husband.
Well, she's roller skating up by herself in the center, and I thought she was stuck up.
I belong to a club that we did everything. And I skated in New York, Syracuse, New York City, Trenton, Chicago.
So it sounds like you were very athletic.
Yeah, I love sports.
Well, thank you very, very much for your time today. And we're certainly very honored that you came and did this interview.
Thank you. Very much.